So, Haiti, for 3 weeks. Thank you very much for everyone here for supporting me. First of all, it just obviously meant just so much to be there and just to see the people and meet the people there. And none of that could have been possible without you guys and the support and the prayers from this church have been very, very encouraging to me. And we talk about prayer and what it means, and you know, there's times you say you pray for people, and then you say thank you, but you don't really think much about it. But I definitely know that people are praying for me, and that showed itself in practical ways, and in smaller things too. I just want to start by telling the story about this. I went to Haiti asking for a lot of prayer because I knew it would be challenging for me personally, and I knew that spiritually it would be trying as well. And I've heard a lot from people who've been to Haiti before. They said, Andrew, you know, there's a real spiritual heaviness in this place that is unlike many other places, and it's just almost something you feel. And so I went there with quite a sense that there was going to be some spiritual work going on, both for and against me, and so prayer was a big part of the preparations. Now, I have to admit, I went there thinking that, well, people who practice voodoo must walk around looking like, you know, just with paint on their face, and they must stand out in the crowd. But to be honest, the average person there is just like here, you know. And the reality is you can grow up in a household that is practicing voodooism, just like you can grow up here going to church, and it means nothing to you. And so we saw lots of that. However, for the population and the demographic that do take it seriously, they do understand what it is. And I was blown away to hear secondhand what it is these people believe about God and about spirituality. I spent time with some Americans there. The one, Ginger, she has been in Haiti most of her life, and some of you have met her. Very nice lady, and made coffee for me every morning, and that was nice. So it was no Tim Hortons, though, that's for sure. But she doesn't know. She's American. So, I sat down with her and I said, well, Ginger, you've been in Haiti your whole life. Just if you could, tell me a bit about voodooism, because I've heard about it. I can hear at nighttime the ceremonies going on. But I said, to be honest, I don't know a lot about it. And she said, Andrew, we had this friend who was a witch doctor, which is kind of the guy that's in charge, I guess. And she said, first of all, I want you to know, he was one of the nicest guys we ever knew. He said, when my husband was sick in the hospital, he was the first one to visit. So she said, don't go around thinking these people are necessarily terrible people, but it's when it comes down to the spiritual things is where they've got it wrong. And she said they would talk about it, and there was one day that this man, their friend, came up to them and said, Ginger and Dave, her husband, she said, you guys just must feel so happy because Jesus Christ, like when you mess up, when you fall down, he picks you up. When you mess up, he says, I love you, I forgive you. He says, but with Satan, if I mess up, he'll kill me, and he only uses me as if I'm his horse to ride on. And she said, well, if you understand this, why don't you come to the Lord? And he said, you know, I can't. He said, my will is chained by the devil. My soul is given over to him. And as Christians, we know that no one is too far gone, that the Lord can do amazing things. But there's people there who truly are so bound in the hold of Satan that for them it seems impossible. And quite frankly, it is near to impossible by our standards, except by prayer alone. And Ginger told me that this man died, and for her that was the hardest thing she'd ever seen in her whole life, because she just ached so hard for this man who understood the truth of Christ, knew who Jesus was, knew that he was greater than Satan, and yet felt he had no power to do anything. And so there are people walking around lost, as there are here, who are really caught up in this. And I had people before the trip say, "Oh, Andrew, don't worry. Voodoo isn't just all in your mind. You know, it's your attitude towards it." And I don't agree with that. I really believe that if there's a God who is powerful, then there's also the devil, the opposition, who is not as great, but who is indeed strong, and to not underestimate that. And I actually really felt encouraged by the prayers, because, like I said, I went there with this sense that there would be some spiritual activity, and I can honestly say, for most of the trip, I was totally fine. Like I said, I could hear things going on at night, but I felt totally protected, totally safe. I slept fine. That being said, on the last night we were up there at the plateau, and it's just this, you know, the middle of nowhere. That night I had a dream that was unlike any dream I've had before, and I am quite sure that it was an attack from Satan, and I know I've heard people say that and you become skeptical, but it really was. I can tell you more about it later on what it was, but I woke up saying that was crazy, that was for sure. And basically the summary of the dream was that the devil was there telling me to live my life and enjoy it, but not to mention Jesus Christ. And when I did, he came over to me and put his hand on my arm, and he said, "I told you again." He's like, "Don't use that name." And it was crazy. It was honestly, I woke up with such a sense that something had happened. And so that actually shook me up a bit, and I thankfully had a chance to pray with a family as I went back to the capital for one more night. Stayed with a family there, and they prayed with me for a bit. Well, they sat with me for about 45 minutes as a family and sang and prayed, and you could see that the teenage girl wanted to go to bed, but her father made her stay up, and they all prayed with me. So just very encouraging, but very real. And so thank you for your prayers. It really, really showed itself. Moving on, though, as you saw, the soccer up there, we talked about it last week, but it went really well. You know, the tournament was a lot of fun. These guys have never played with jerseys before. They've never had good equipment, and so they had a great time. The kids you've seen up there had a lot of fun, and it's just neat to see kids playing. You know, it really just makes you happy. And though the formal soccer tournament was a highlight for me, inviting teams to come and play and refereeing that, I'd say one of the highlights for me was just the nights where we didn't have anything scheduled, and we would just bring a ball to the field, and a bunch of kids would come from who knows where, and they would play. And it's neat because, quite literally, it's a plateau. It's a huge area of land, and there's, you know, a small house here and there, or a hut, or whatever it would be. And I was amazed when these kids would show up. I said, "Where do you guys come from? There's no houses around here." So they must walk, you know, 20 minutes to get there at least. And for the teams that came for the tournament, they would walk about an hour each night to get there. And that's pretty neat. But I think I read it last week, but I'm going to read it again. Just the total amount of contributions that we were able to bring down. I stuffed two big hockey bags full of soccer equipment. Sounds funny, but we had 75 jerseys, 10 referee jerseys, 25 soccer balls, 10 pairs of shorts, 10 pairs of shin guards, 8 pairs of shoes, the goalie gloves, some jerseys for the goalies, 4 pumps, and you got to bring a lot of those little pins for the pumps because they break, the orange pylons for doing practice, the 2 trophies you saw. We bought those in Kensington Market, and I tell you, they were quite pleased with those $5 trophies, so it was something. The guy came up to me and he said, at the end, he said, "Andrew, thank you so much for being here. The team that won," and he said, "you know, we'd like to get you something, but we have no money. Could we sell this trophy and buy you something?" And I said, "Well, no, first of all, being here is your gift to me. Secondly, you're not going to get any money for it, so don't bother." I didn't tell him that part, but to them it was... you know, it's something special to have that. It's something to take pride in, and it was quite honestly just a buzz in the air every night, just as a soccer fan, it was neat to see. But then also just the chance to get to know these people, to share with them. I have to tell you though, one of my biggest struggles was standing before these guys, most of them for the tournament itself being roughly my age. So that they're my peers, and coming from a different culture, most of them, 99% of them, not Christians. I felt intimidated and I felt scared, and at times I felt even unworthy, the right word. I didn't feel almost in the right place to be standing up and saying to these guys to preach to them. I almost didn't, but I did, and I prayed for strength for that. But it was hard. To be honest, it was really hard to stand before these guys my age without really understanding what their lives are like. I mean, they are poor, and it's hard, and to say to them, well, God will help you. And I actually have a confession to make. It's a serious one. I wanted to share a message about, when Jesus speaks to the people about, you know, living water, and you don't need food because God will provide. You don't worry about these things. God will provide what you need. Don't you know He already knows these things? And I was going to share with these guys. I was going to say, you know, God, because it doesn't rain there. I mean, we're talking about people who eat once a day. Where we were, it's very poor, it's very dry, and the government is far from helpful. So these people are poor, and there's a real need. And to be honest, I in the end didn't share that with them, and I should have, but it's just a confession to you guys, because I felt it was really hard to stand up and say, God says, don't worry about this, trust in Him. When I, you know, don't worry, He'll give you food. You don't have to worry, just trust in Him. And I didn't do that, and that's a confession, and I wish I had of, because we believe that God does do these things. It's just, to be honest, it's hard. And so I apologize for that on behalf of the church. However, I did have many other opportunities to share with these guys about the faith that I have and that the meaning that Christ has for me, and to share with them a bit of truth. And they really took it in. I think they did. And we shared a meal together each night, and it was just kind of a neat opportunity. I want to tell you about one guy in particular that I spent time with. There was a picture of him up there. Mezu is his name. He's 18 years old and has grown up in the area. I saw where he lives, and it's far from anything special. There's holes in the roof. There's, you know, no, really nothing in the house whatsoever. But a beautiful family. I think he has 5 siblings. His mother works in the gardens every day, very hard. And his father just left them, actually, for another woman this year, which is a big problem. And I mean, anywhere in the world, it's a sensitive issue, I know. But particularly in Haiti, the attitude of men towards women is to treat them as if, you know, once you get sick of them, to move on. They're nothing. There's no responsibility from the men. And so the ratio where we were, even in the church service, we would see an average of 5 women to one man. And so it's a real problem for both the kids and for the community, because now you have the women doing the work, and it's hard work. I went for one morning with this lady who's got to be in her 50s, and she's, you know, hoeing the ground, planting seeds, digging up soil, moving in the wheelbarrow. And after 2 hours in the morning, I was tired. I was sweating. And they do this every day, and it's the children and the women for the most part. And so Manis, the man you saw there who was in charge of the organization there, he's really trying to teach these guys. He's a Haitian man, and he's grown up there, and he's trying to teach them that the young men, like Mezu, that there's a huge responsibility to your community and also to the women in your lives. And even for those in the church, they have this mindset in the culture that it's okay to beat your wife. And he's teaching them, no, you know, biblically, if you're a Christian, that's not okay. You know, you have to love your wives. And this was crazy, but on one of the church services, he spoke about the verse where it says, wives, submit to your husbands, and husbands, submit to the Lord. And touching on this issue, because there's a lot of problems even in the Christian families. And you got to understand the unique scenario in Haiti of this small community of people and the respect that this man has, having grown up there, gone away, got an education, and come back to help and really helping them. And he's very well respected. And so he has the authority to say things like this. But we were sitting in church, and he preached this sermon. And then one by one, he looked at the couples, and not too many, but the married couples in the small church. And he said, Mr. Peters, can you stand up? And he said, can you tell me how things are in your household with your wife? And he said, oh, pretty good, pretty good. You know, I think things are good. And okay, Mrs. Peters, can you tell us? And I'm telling you, none of the women said anything, and it was serious. And they sat there, and some of them cried. And one by one, he did this. And I felt so awkward that they would do this. And could you imagine doing that here? No thanks. Like, I wouldn't want to be a part of it. But they, just because of the respect he has there, they were able to do that. And it's foreign to us, but for them, that really works. There's a real accountability in this community of people. And it's not just one person doing their thing. It's a people living together. And so in many ways, it's challenging for them because they're forced to be accountable. And even with the projects they do, building the airstrip, which happened a few years ago, so that people could fly in there. He divided the land into portions of about 100 meters and gave them to each, to a family, kind of like Nehemiah and the wall, and so that each family was in charge of this part of the airstrip to clear it out and to fix it up. And it worked amazing because there was this accountability. And it's crazy because even here, could you imagine doing that? And he said, they're building a church right now. And he said, okay, one by one, who here has helped build the church with working on the church this week? And most people stood up, and he said, okay, and the rest of you, I want you to stand up. Okay, you, why didn't you help out with the church this week? And I'm sitting there like, oh, I hope he doesn't ask me. And they would say, well, I was sick. He says, okay, but work hard this week. And then an older lady stands up, and she says, Manisa, I'm just getting old. My back is hurting. He says, okay, well, pay me some money, and I'll get someone else to do it. And it's amazing because you have to understand this idea that everyone is doing it together, and there's nothing for free. And the problem with many organizations in the world is that they've gone in and just given people money, resources, and left. He's there, and he's going to be there until he dies, teaching these people to live on their own, to sustain on their own, and to trust God. And it's profound. And it's working. And you can see the difference from where we were to 5 minutes down the road to what a difference they've made there. But they still have a long way to go. And when we talk about praying, we think of things like rain. And you talk about faith of the people when you pray to God for rain and it doesn't rain and your crops don't grow. I mean, you're talking about a challenging situation. And none of us, I don't think, have been in that scenario where we are quite literally praying for the food to be on our table for the family that we have. And yet these people do this every day. I'm happy to say, though, while we were there, it did rain. And when it rains five times a year, when you see rain, it's quite a big deal. And it really poured down. And I think, did you get the email? I'm not sure if it was forwarded to some of you guys, but I sent one to my parents, and I think they passed it along to some other people, and it did. It rained one night we were there, and that was just an amazing thing to see. But the reality is that the next week it didn't rain, and the week after it didn't rain, and as far as I know, since I've been gone, it hasn't rained. And so we need to pray, and these people need to be assured that there's people around the world praying for them, and that God does care. And I saw that despite the reality of no rain, of hard living, that they trust in God. And so this young man, Mezu, I would spend time with him every day, and we'd sleep out under the gazebo together, and I would just talk to him about life. And it's neat talking to an 18-year-old Haitian guy about life and about girls and about all these things. I tried to explain to him what the TTC was. I don't know why I got on that sidetrack, but it was the hardest thing ever to explain. How do you tell someone in a third country what a subway is? It just didn't make sense to him. But But also we talked about, you know, spiritual things and about God. And of all the things that I remember, the most vivid memory I have is laying there, going to sleep, and then hearing him pray and thanking the Lord for the day, for his family, for the things that he had, and for the opportunity to be able to help others. And it's a faith like that that just blew me away, just to see people who have nothing and yet have everything, in a sense, in their faith. And I know he's not perfect. He's just a kid, and everyone falls short. But I was very encouraged to spend time with him. And it kind of gave me something to think about, especially with humility. Just a quick verse that Jesus talks about in Luke 18. It says, "To some who were confident in their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself, 'God, I thank you that I'm not like the other men, robbers and evildoers and adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get.' But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, 'God, have mercy on me, a sinner.' And Jesus said, 'I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted.'" And I can tell you, these guys there taught me something about humility. They work hard, they have a hard life, and yet they recognize who God is. And it challenged me in my pride. Just kind of to wrap things up, I was learning a lot about humility while I was there through the people and also just through my personal time of prayer and kind of reflection. And there came a point on the trip after I was a bit frustrated and tired one day. And I went into the church by myself and I just sat there and I said, I didn't really know what to pray, and things were just frustrating me, and they weren't going according to plan, which happens anywhere, you know, whether it be here or in a third world country. And I was just reminded that we have such a need for God. Like, we really do, don't we? We have such a need for God, and you see that in Haiti in some ways more than you see here, because it's easy to get sidetracked here, but I really was reminded. I said, and I came to that, I was sitting in the church that day and I prayed. I said, "God, like, I really do need you. I need your help with the work here. I need your help back home. And more so, I need you in just for everything in my life." And it was very humbling, because you have to start to let go of things that you think you can do on your own. And I was reading C.S. Lewis's book, Mere Christianity, and he talks about pride, and he says, you know, pride is the most dangerous of all sins, because it's the thing that says to God, "I don't need you, I can do it on my own." And I was very challenged on this trip to think about that. I was challenged to think that, you know, I need God, I need God. And so I thank the Lord for challenging me in that area. And it's one that we all wrestle with. So, thanks again, guys, for your prayers and your support. I have a letter that, kind of a summary letter. It's just sitting out in the foyer there, just with an overview of the trip. But it really did. It opened my eyes. It taught me a lot about the people. It's hard to see poverty like that, and to see kids on the street, and when you're eating your meal, kids looking in the window, knowing they're not eating. Not just kids, but men and women too, right, who just have nothing. And I mean, we just need to remember to pray for these people and to look for ways to help. If you have any more questions, I always find it hard to summarize in 20 minutes, but I would love to talk to you more about it. There are many more stories. There's another family in the capital that's a story in itself that I would love to share more about. They help with the kids on the street there. Please talk to me. I have more pictures. If you couldn't see the pictures there, I'll show you them. But I want to say thanks for all that you guys I've done, and this has been an amazing opportunity. I'd love to go again. We'll see what happens. But for now, I thank God for this privilege to have gone on behalf of this church and so many others. And some neat things happen. So I'm just going to pray, and we'll close.